And today we're going to take a look at a story in the Bible about a man that comes to Jesus and wants to know, where do I draw my lines? Some people draw the line based on how much money they get, or how comfortable they are, how much pleasure they get, or how much fun that they get, what their family's like. Where do you know where to draw the lines? Maybe you draw them and you say, well, I'm not hurting anyone, or this is how my parents taught me to draw the lines, or this is where the church said to draw the lines. Where do we draw the lines in life? It's a big part of growing up, big part of being an adult, big part of knowing how to live life is, where do I draw the lines? Now, let me read you the backstory of this person that comes to Jesus and says, where is it that I'm supposed to draw the line? It's in the Bible in Luke chapter 10. Grab your notes. This isn't in there, but I just want you to see this part right here. Here's the backstory. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law, replied Jesus. How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You've answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. And so he comes to Jesus and says he's an expert in the religious law. I'm Robin. Welcome to East Lake Church. I'm glad you're here. What he's saying is, if I'm okay to go to heaven, I must be okay with God. If I know where to draw the line so I can get into heaven, then I must be okay with God. At East Lake, we say we're a church for everyone because we believe God's okay with everyone. That Jesus loves everyone. And Jesus wants the best for everyone. In fact, it's the big idea you can write in your notes. We're a church for everyone. And it says he's an expert in the religious law. He's an expert in church. But he has a problem because the way he does church and the way Jesus does church is entirely different. And he starts to recognize that no matter where he draws the lines, he never feels close enough to God. He never feels okay with God. But all the people that are hanging around Jesus seem like they're close to God. Are you an expert in anything? Maybe you're an expert shot with a gun, or an expert hunter, an expert at cooking, expert barbecue, expert nap taker. I mean, you're just an expert at something. You know, this is an expert. He's an expert in church. But he looks at Jesus and says, you do church entirely different than I do church. I wonder why. And look what it says in your notes. It says that, but he wanted to justify himself. So here's the story we're going to look at. So he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? So Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, okay, well, who is my neighbor then? How do you justify yourself when you draw the line? How do you decide that you've drawn it in the right place? And this guy's a church guy, so he goes to church all the time, and he's trouble feeling, I don't feel quite okay with God. Imagine the people that don't go to church at all, because they want to be close to God too. One of the things we believe at East Lake is that everybody wants to be close to God. It doesn't matter if they're going to church right now. Some people that aren't going to church, it doesn't mean they don't want to be close to God. When I was a teenager, I had some people that went to church, and so they invited me to their church. I didn't go to church, but I wanted to be close to God, so I went to their church, and I hung out, and I even got baptized. And as I was there, I just realized, I'm not going to be able to keep all these rules. I'm a teenager. I've got some sinning to do. There's no way I'll be able to keep all these rules. So I just ditched church. But it didn't mean I didn't think about God. And it didn't mean that I didn't want to be close to God. You know, some people that don't go to church think about God more than people that go to church. They think about God all the time, how they could be close to God. But they don't think about going to church because they don't see church as a place that's going to help them get close to God. And so here's this guy, and he comes, he says, well, how do I justify myself, Lord? And how do you justify yourself? How do you determine if you're okay or not? Look at the next part in this. Jesus answers him with a story, and here it comes. And this is a famous one. Some people call it the Good Samaritan, the story of the Good Samaritan. So he starts a story. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now, everybody would have recognized this story because this is a really famous road. They used to call it the Bloody Road. And it's 8 miles, and it's straight down 2,000 feet from Jerusalem to Jericho. And so it has all these cliffs and rocky places and lots of places where people could hide out. This is a real road that lots of people knew about, but only a few people traveled it because it was a gamble. It was a risk to go down it. So here's what it is. Anytime in your life when you know you really shouldn't do something, but you do it anyways. And when you do it, you think, well, it's not going to happen to me. I know everybody else that's tried this. I know what's happened to them, but I think I can get away with it. I won't, what happened to them won't happen to me. And it wasn't unexpected because, I mean, everybody knew if you went down this road, you ever watch someone and you look at their life and you go, oh man, if they go down that road. Or maybe you're thinking about going down a road right now and you're thinking about it. And people have come to you and they said, don't go down that road, don't go down that road. No matter what they say, one ear and out the other ear, you're just going to go down that road. And you think, it's not going to turn out that way for me. And then it does. That's what this story's about. Or maybe here's a different take on it. What if the man didn't have any choice? What if his job meant he had to go down that road? What if he had responsibilities and he had to go down that road? It's the family where both the husband and the wife have to work overtime hours and they both have to have jobs. So they work and they work to pay all the bills, and then there's problems with the children. And you think, gosh, I didn't have any choice. I had to go down that road. Maybe he had to go down the road. Here's the point. You get beat up in life lots of different ways, not always because you did wrong things. And he gets beat up. And it says that they left him half dead. At East Lake Church, we care about a lot of people that are half dead on the inside. They look like this man on the inside. On the outside, maybe not, but on the inside, they're half dead. They feel just like him, stripped and naked and ashamed. They don't know where to turn. They don't think church can help. And we want to be the place that just sends one simple, clear message. Jesus wants the best for you. Even if you feel half dead. And he's not all dead. And you know, when you're half dead, you sort of wonder, maybe it'd be better to be all dead. Because it hurts to be half dead. And that's how they leave him, half dead. Is there any part of your life and it's not all alive? Sometimes you feel just like this. And you know, there's lots of people where we are here. Lots of them. But on the inside, they're really like half dead. And then now the story continues. Let's see, Jesus starts talking. He says, a priest happened to be going down the same road. So he's taking a risk too. Here comes the priest. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So to a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. And so the first one's a priest now. This is a church guy. And imagine if you're the guy that's half dead on the road and you hear somebody preaching. So Jesus is telling this story now, and everybody would be relating because they all go to this big, huge church like this priest. There's one church in this area, the big Jewish church. And here comes a church guy down the road. And they're remembering, oh, this is that road where everybody gets jacked up and gets the beat down. So they're thinking, they're listening. And then if you're like, you're the guy on the road and you hear somebody approaching. You ever felt half dead and here comes somebody, looks like they're approaching, this is going to be a good relationship, I'm finally going to get a job, this time I'm going to pay off their credit cards, this time my kids are going to come back, and you can just feel it, and they're approaching, and you start to get your hopes up. And I wonder what this guy would have thought when he saw it was a church guy coming. He sees a church guy coming, he's like half dead, and he looks, he goes, that's a church guy coming, that's a priest, they're supposed to love everybody. And here he comes, and he's probably thinking, he's definitely going to stop and help me, it's a church guy coming. Or maybe not. Maybe he saw a church guy coming and goes, I'm not a church guy. Last time I was in trouble and a church guy ran into me, it just felt worse. I had this buddy at work, he has this little 5-year-old girl and she's just a handful, I guess. I call her Shirley Temple, but apparently she doesn't act like Shirley Temple. She's just a little hellion on wheels. Always, she's a little rowdy kid, which I like. But anyway, so she gives her dad heck all the time. And so you know what happened? Here's how they solved the problem. They took her to see one of the head guys at their church. and is, you know, well, you're in trouble, you're not being a good girl. So he took her to see one of the head guys at the church, and now, he's telling me this story, now whenever she starts acting up and she throws a tantrum and she starts to do something wrong, all they have to say is, we'll take you back to see the guy at church. No, no, I don't want to go, please, I'll stop. And I'm thinking, well, that's going to work in the short term, but what are we training her? We're training her, when you're in trouble, don't go to the church. And there's a lot of people out there that think that, you guys. They're in trouble. And when they see the church approaching, they're like, no thanks. It's just going to get way worse. And it's interesting in this story because this religious expert, it's probably a little uncomfortable for him. You know, probably a little uncomfortable because now he's talking about a church guy, Jesus now, crowd around. He goes, you know, and the religious expert's probably thinking, I'm usually the hero of the story. And here, the priest, you know, there was a law for priests and Jewish people. They weren't allowed to touch dead people. I don't know why you'd make a law like that. I mean, how many of us ever touch dead people? But anyways, there was a real law there. No touching dead people, you know. I don't know why. It's like, don't eat coyote. It's like, how many chances do you have to eat coyote? But anyways, it's like, don't touch dead people. So maybe the priest thought, you know, well, I can't take a chance. Because if you touched a dead person, you couldn't go to church for a long time. So maybe he thought to himself, well, I had to be really careful. That guy looks like he's dead over there, and I can't touch a dead person. But here's the thing in the story, and don't miss this detail. The priest never even goes over to check on the guy to see if he's dead. He makes his judgment from afar. Have you ever had anybody do that to you? They don't know your story. They don't know your circumstances. They don't know anything about your life. They don't know what you're going through, but they just judge you from a long ways away. Well, you're divorced. Well, you had kids when you weren't married. Well, or you didn't go to college or whatever. You have a long beard and pierced earrings and a tattoo. What do they call those things? Sleeves. And they just judge you from a long ways away. That's what the priest did. He didn't go over and get close and see what the guy's story was. He didn't engage at all. He made a judgment on first impression. And let me just tell you something. I'll make you a promise. You bring your friends and your family, and they will not experience judgment here. In fact, we're hoping their first impression will be acceptance. They walk up and they see the guy with the candy, and hopefully they're thinking, candy at church, that can't be bad. And then when you put Seinfeld on the screens, they're thinking, this isn't a church, this is some kind of a trick. Everything we do is to send one message. You'll be accepted here, not judged. And here's this guy laying on the road, and the priest doesn't even go over. Now let me ask you a question here, because you got to sort of get the Bible a little closer. Is there anybody in your life, and you're judging them from a long ways away, and you don't know their story? Because you haven't engaged. And you need to. That's God talking to us right there. You hear that? He's just sending a message right in. So, that poor girl. And when she comes back in, don't look at her and make her feel embarrassed. That's not good. Or we'll all look at her when she comes back in. I better say it again, though. Is there anybody in your life you're judging and it's from a long ways away? You haven't taken the time to get to know their story. Get to know their story, maybe things would change. East Lake is a place where people can come in slowly and through a process, their story becomes known, but they won't be judged. So then the Levite comes. Now the Levite, he's like kind of like a priest, but not quite a priest, but he's the guy that works at the temple. So he's like a temple guy. So he goes to the temple and he does all the work around the temple. Now remember, in this time, in Jesus' time, there's one big national church. That there was a just big, huge national church. And almost everybody goes to that church or not. And if you don't go to that church, you kind of stick out. And now in that church, like if you're a temple worker in that church, that's big stuff. I mean, if you get to even go to the temple, it's a pretty big thing in that church. But if you get to work at the temple, that's a big thing. Well, this guy's like a temple worker. This is a big guy, you know. And so he comes down. And Jesus hints, just the opposite of the priest, if you catch the details of the story, he's coming down and he sees the guy, and Jesus hints that he had a long time to make his decision. Maybe this happened. Maybe the priest is going one direction, and the Levite's coming the other direction. Maybe the priest told him something, say, ooh, be careful when you go up there. I think there's a dead guy up there. you know, he was moaning, but it's probably just like a dead moan. And so anyway, just be careful. So this guy maybe had some time to think about it. And it's the people in your life that you see all the time. You have lots of time to think about them. You see them, your family. You see them all the time. And so this Levite, he has lots of time. He sees him come, lots of time to think about it. And he decides against it. And you know, our judgments can be for or against someone. I know it seems like accuracy should matter most, but what really matters is my judgment for someone or against someone. There's lots of people that want to go to church, but they know that the church is against their lifestyle. And the church is against what they believe. And so they don't go. And you know, it's sad. It's just a small step, because in just a small step, the church is against a small step, and Jesus is against me too. And so that's how they feel. And then I want to tell you something. At Eastlake, we're not against anyone, because we believe Jesus is for everyone. For everyone. That's why we call our church a place for everyone, because Jesus is for everyone. Nothing special about us, but there's something special about him. So the Levite decides against it. And listen, maybe someone knows you really super, super well, and they've seen you, and they've known you, and they've seen everything. What does it feel like when they just decide against it? No, you're not worth it. No, you'll probably screw it up again. Now, I remember last time. And they decide against you. You know, you have an opportunity to be the person you always have wanted someone to be for you. You don't have to be against anyone. And it is tricky business to disagree with someone and not be against them. Do you know that most people in the world know what the church is against? Because that's what we're known for. But hardly anybody knows what we're for. So we're not known for that. We make it very, very clear. The way your lifestyle, we're against that. And the Bible says you're not supposed to live that way. We're against that. And so everybody, that's how they see the church. Is they're just against. Let me say it really clearly for you. At Eastlake Church, we're not against anyone. We want people to come here and for the very first time to feel like, I think they're for me. Now, two people walk by, okay, one person decides, nah, I'm going to make my judgment from way over here on the side, and the other one takes a long time and decides against, and then Jesus introduces a third character. Let's read it. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him, a Samaritan. Now, listen, this would have shocked the crowd, because a Samaritan had no social status at all. Because the church didn't want anything to do with the Samaritan, and the Samaritan didn't want anything to do with the church. In the Jewish church, there was these tons and tons of rules. Here's what a Samaritan was. They lived in northern Israel, and they were sort of like this mixed breed of Jewish person. They weren't pure Jew, and so the church didn't like them because they weren't a pure enough Jew, and they didn't practice the religion pure enough. They weren't willing to follow all the rules because there was lots of rules in this big church. They told you what you could eat and what you couldn't eat and how you should dress and how you should appear and what you could do on the church day, all these rules. And the Samaritans just said, no, man, deal me out. I'm not keeping all those rules. I can't keep all those rules. And so they weren't welcome. That's one of the reasons we don't have a big, list of rules at Eastlake, because people, if they get the rules first, the first thing they think is, I can't keep those, or I have to hide the way I live. Who wants to be a part of a place where I have to hide who I live? So we just don't. And so this Samaritan, so I'm sure the religious expert is thinking, Jesus, what are you doing? You're making all the good guys in the story bad guys, and you're making all the bad guys good guys. The Samaritan, everybody knows, we don't even let them go to church, they're so bad. Do you know they had a saying in this day? Like, if you were really bad, they'd say, stop acting like a Samaritan. I mean, that's what they were known as. And Jesus makes him the good guy. And I'm sure everybody was just rattled, and the expert is probably thinking, oh, man. And the whole thing, remember how it starts. Jesus, how do I get into heaven? Because if I get into heaven, I must be okay with God. And then Jesus says, love your neighbor. And so then the man says very cleverly, well, who's my neighbor? And then Jesus finally answers the question. And don't miss this. By telling this story about the Samaritan, he finally answers the question. He says, listen, man, it's not about who your neighbor is. It's about who you are. That's what it's about. And by making it about a Samaritan, everyone is included. You may think because of your past that God can't use you. Not true. I mean, the Samaritan is not an expert. It's not like he's an RN or he's got some degree in medicine or anything like that. He's just a guy that does what he can do. He makes himself available to God and God can use him. And he's the least person that you would think would show up in the story. What's God doing in your life? Or how many times have you thought, well, I can't help someone? And by the way, the Samaritan's got to be the perfect person because he understands. He knows what it's like to feel half dead. He knows what it's like to want to be close to God, but they don't want you to go to church. Or if you go to church, you got to go through a bunch of lectures. He knows all that. He knows what it's like to be rejected religiously from his family. He gets all that. He's like the perfect person to help this guy beat down in the road. And let me tell you something. Here's why, because he understands. And you're someone's perfect person because you understand. There's only one qualification. I understand. That's it. He just understands. He's like, whoa, I know that over there when you're beat down like that. I get that. He understands. And he doesn't do anything big. Let's read. I mean, check this out here. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. So he loses his wine. That's a big sacrifice. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, that's about a week's wages, and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. And so it's not like he does a lot of stuff. He isn't really super, super qualified. He just sees the guy and he helps him. Now, here's one thing he does. It's an interesting detail. He lets the guy ride his donkey. So he puts the guy on his donkey. So here's all he's willing to do is to be uncomfortable. That's all. I mean, you know, he's just willing to let the guy ride on the donkey and he's willing to walk. And that probably wasn't his plan and it's uncomfortable. And if you're going to be something for other people, you'll have to be uncomfortable. How much does comfort rule your life? You got to do something for some, whoa, that means I have to wake up early. That's my morning to sleep in. I'll take a pass. Whoa, that's $10. That's $20. That's my money. Do you know what? Anybody can do what this guy did. Anybody can be uncomfortable. Everybody qualifies to be uncomfortable. He didn't draw the line and said, dude, listen, I draw the line with my donkey, man. I mean, I don't walk. I'm a rider. You're a walker. If you can't walk, then you have to wait for the next good Samaritan to come by because I'm not willing to be uncomfortable. And that's the only qualification. That's all that happens in this story is he's willing to be uncomfortable. Years and years ago, I had a youth group, hundreds of kids in this youth group. It was back in the 90s. And it was like in the grunge punk era and all that stuff that's coming back now. And they were pretty crazy looking kids. And in our church, which was a huge church, they started wanting to come to the church on Sunday mornings. They used to just go to the youth group on Wednesday nights. And it was skaters and all these crazy, we'd had live bands. And then they started showing up at the church. And initially, when people saw these kids coming into the church, let me tell you, it made them feel uncomfortable. I mean, you know, they were just average, everyday people, and they got some guy standing in front of them with a big freaking mohawk going on, and he's, like, worshiping like this, and the church was uncomfortable. They were like, what's happening? I remember this one kid. He was a great student. He went to USC, poor kid. Anyways, he was like, you know, but he was a good kid, and the youth group was only like about 20 or 30 kids, and we met at this school, and the school found out about it, and then hundreds of kids started coming, but most of them weren't Christians yet. They were slowly becoming Christians, and so one time, there was like, the youth group was like, one week it was like 20, and like a month later it was like 130, and this kid, who's a senior, walks up on the patio, there's people skating, we got a band going, all this crazy stuff going on. He walks up and he goes, who the hell are all these people? And I thought, well, there it is. It's uncomfortable when God starts to reach at people. They start responding. Changed our whole church. Because a whole group of people embraced all those kids and not many of them are in the ministry full-time, have great families, made huge change. They were at a time in their life where they really needed some square adults to say, double thumbs up, come sit by me. And they did it. It changed everybody's life because they were willing to be uncomfortable. Maybe you have sometimes in church it's funny how people, we had this church, in our church in San Diego, there was this one couple that always sat in the exact same place. I don't know what their thing was, but it was the exact same place every time. Well, these visitors came in early, and oh my gosh, they didn't get the memo that this was a seat that these people only sat in. So these people circled around, and they kept waiting, like, they're in our chair over there, you know, it's like as if they're a chair. And they finally went up to them and told them, you're in our seat. I could have strangled them. I was like, what are you thinking, man? They finally show up at church, they're in your seat. I mean, they weren't willing to be uncomfortable. Oh, they had to sit a little further down the row. Hey, I'm an aisle person. Grow up. They weren't willing to be uncomfortable. Here's all I'm saying. We're going to be uncomfortable at Eastlake. We haven't even got there yet. You haven't even had to park far away from the church because we can't park everybody here. We haven't even done a building. We haven't even poured the porridge yet. It's coming. Because we're willing to be uncomfortable. Now look what happens here. So, you know, the story gets over and Jesus asks him this question. It's great. He says, which of these three do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Do you get that? He can't even say the word Samaritan. Is that crazy? Do you have anybody you feel that way about? You don't even like saying their name. Is there anybody out there that doesn't like to say yours? He can't even say his name. The one who had mercy on him, Jesus told him, go and do likewise. This is awesome. So even though I can't say his name, this guy says, you know what? This is so powerful. He says, you know what? If I was laying in the middle of the road half dead, I'd want that guy to walk by. That must have been pretty crazy. Because you know, with all his heart, man, he's wanting to say, church guy, pick the church guy. And he's like, someone I really loved was laying in the middle of the road. I want that guy to be my neighbor. Now let's look at a couple points of application because it's good. Turn your notes over. We always do it. Here's the sentence. How you judge someone determines your involvement. So remember, there was two ways to judge, and one is from far away. You don't get their story. I work with a bunch of salesmen, and this crazy story happened recently. This person comes walking up, and they're Asian. They come walking up, and hair is all kind of messed up, and shirt and pants don't match, flip-flops on. He's got a backpack on, and you're thinking, this guy can't find nothing, you know. Nobody wants to deal with him at all, you know what I mean? And so this one guy, tall white guy, walks over, and he talks to him a little bit, and he pre-qualifies him. He says, this guy can't be able to buy nothing, so he sends him off to another place. About an hour later, the guy is buying. He's buying something. Turns out he had $14,000 cash in his backpack. But he judged him from afar. Didn't take the time to get the story. The dude had the money, but he never engaged with him. Because when you judge people from afar, you can really be wrong. The priest was wrong. He thought the guy was dead. He wasn't dead. Listen, there's some people wrong about you. And you subtly believe the things they think about you, and they don't even know you, man. They are so far outdated on who you are. They haven't been around you in ages. And they hold an old judgment over your head, and it's from a long, long ways away. And it still kind of rattles around in your brain. You might even do things still to somehow try to please them. Drop it. They've judged you from way too far. They don't even know you anymore. That's the priest. Of course, we can do it too. That guy, bless his heart, he was just laughing. He goes, I'm never doing that again, man. That crazy guy bought a car. He had $14,000 in his backpack. He couldn't even afford shoes. I didn't know. It's like, he never took the time to learn about what his story was about, man. At Eastlake Church, we're going to learn people's stories. And they will not be judged on first impressions. Now, there's the other side of it. There's the Levite. takes his time, and decides against. In that youth group I told you about, there was a kid in there, his name was James Quigley. I don't think he ever washed his hair. He had the strong, long, stringy, greasy hair. He wore a black coat with patches all over it that he put on with safety pins. That was like the style. He had these Doc Martens that looked like they were about five generations old. And, you know, everything was really baggy then. And he was just a sight to behold. And so he would come to the youth group once in a while, you know, and I knew he was taking a lot of drugs. I knew that. And I was concerned about his influence, I have to say that. I had a long time to think about it. And I had an accurate judgment, but the problem was it was a judgment against him. I saw him I saw him kind of like a virus or something that can infect our group. And so, one time at youth group, he shows up and he's about 30 feet away from the sidewalk, and he's screaming at the youth group. Outside, we're all goofing around. Again, there's lots of kids there, just all these kids. And he's screaming, and I'm trying to, what the heck is he doing? And I walked over, and he was screaming at me. I know how you feel about me, Robin. I heard what you told the other kids about me. I know what you think about me. I know you think I'm a bad kid. Screaming at the top of his lungs at me. Which will get your attention. And I walked out to where I was. I said, what are you talking about? Because I know what you think about me. You don't like me. You think I'm a bad kid. You don't want me around. When's the last time someone got you cold? Whew. You got nowhere to run or wiggle at all. They just said right to your face. And I was like, you're right, man. And I'm sorry. He came that night, and about a week later, it all blew up for him with all the drugs. And he had to go do an inpatient back in the Midwest. And when he came back, his family requested we got to be a big part of his recovery. And you know, we ended up becoming the best of friends. He became a Christian, professor in a school, married, kids, walks with the Lord. Man, he became a strong man. And there was a moment of truth, not for him, for the leader. I know what you think about me. I wish it didn't take that type of experience where someone had to scream at me. I wish I could get to the place where I could feel it in my own heart. You're starting to get against somebody. That's where it began for me. Now I listen, and I try to catch it early. You know what? I'm starting to be against them. You're safe to bring people here, because I promise we will work as hard as we can to be for them and not against them. As hard as we can, and we're human. But I'll never forget James Quigley yelling at me, man. I'll never forget that. And I hope no one's doing it to you. Against you. But you can't control that. But here's something you can control. You can disagree with people and not be against them. You know, it'd be great in West Valley if people knew what East Lake was for and they never could figure out what we were against. That's a good church. And look here, number two, you are someone's perfect person. Not because you're perfect or I'm perfect, far from it. Not because this is the perfect church, because we can understand. And when you can understand what someone's going through, you have some way to relate to them, then you make yourself available to Jesus, and it's his power that does it. And isn't it interesting in this story, when it's all said and done, he tells him, he says, here's what's up. And then he says, go do it to this guy. And like, who in your life is laying alongside the road? And you understand. You're like the perfect person for them. You know why this can be a great church? Because we can all feel like we're someone's perfect person, but not because we're perfect. See, that's a problem with churches. You have to become a pretty perfect person to be perfect for anybody else. And so nobody, it's just a few little handful of people, and they're usually like the priest. They don't stop for nobody. I mean, it's just like in a healthy church, everyone is someone's perfect person. Not because they're perfect, because they can understand. Now, there's some lines there, and I just wondered, if you had to jot down just one name on that line, who are you the perfect person for? And it might be uncomfortable. It would be very uncomfortable to be someone's perfect person. There's this guy that I work with that's, he's a part of a religion. It's nothing like my religion, but I've really come to love him. He's been here, and he's going through a terrible time, something he never expected with his family. He's losing his whole family. And he doesn't feel like he's even done anything wrong to get it. And the parts that he has done wrong, he can't see. And the other day, we were talking about something. They were having this special stuff in his church. He was just breaking his heart that his family couldn't be there. Then later in the day, we were talking about a hamburger place. It's around here. It has good milkshakes, Culver's or something like that. Anyways, great milkshake. So he's from the Midwest. They have a lot of them out there. And so someone was saying they were going to go there, and he's around a bunch of men now. This is a dude, and he sort of stares off into space. He says, "Now you're going to make me cry." And I said, "How come?" He goes, "I have so many great memories about being at that place." Because he's losing everything now. And later in the day, I saw this guy that goes to his church, and he came over, and he's trying to help him out. He goes, "Listen, don't worry about it, man. God's going to give you another person, somebody that wants you. You're going to get another person now." And he says, "I know, but I say, no, seriously, you just got to drop that and move on, because God's going to give you somebody that wants you." And I'm watching the thing. I said, "Can I hand you a chainsaw? Why don't you hit him with that? I mean, that's really working, you know." And he goes off. And so I went back to my desk, and about an hour later, I wanted to go say something to him, but it was uncomfortable. And we all know the rules. You don't talk about God and religion anywhere because we live in America. You don't do that anymore. And so, you know, it's just like you don't do it. And so I was just like, ah. And then I'm thinking, you know, I want to say something to him. So I finally went over and sat down at his desk, and it was uncomfortable. And I said, "Hey, man, how are you doing?" And he looked at me and said, "I'm not doing good. I'm a mess." He goes, It's not going to work. It's not going to come together. And I just listened and listened and listened and listened. It was, work was over, you know. We're just listen. And then finally, I just got a nudge from the Holy Spirit to tell him about this time in my life that I was really, really super confused, and I couldn't figure out what to do. And eventually, God came through for me. And so I just told him, I said, "Hey, dude, I just this thing happened to me one time, and it was the worst ever." And I just told him. And it was uncomfortable. Now it's uncomfortable because I'm with him, and it's uncomfortable because I'm telling him something that I really don't want to say about myself. I'm proud of it. He's listening. And when I got done, I feel like, okay, time to go. You know, it's always hard to go at those times because you're like, "I need to go." It's like, how do you go? It's like, "Hey, done now." You know. So I got up, and I started walking away, and he yelled this out now, public place. "Thanks for asking." Just that. We misread so many people, so many. And if we just could push through the uncomfortableness, we're the perfect person for them. Not because we're perfect, but we understand. What name did you write down? There's got to be some name in your life. Well, they don't live in Utah. There are phones. Who would it be? Who are you the perfect person for? Now look here at the bottom line. Jesus is a neighbor to everyone. And it's this part of the story I don't want you to miss, because sometimes you could come to a place like this and you could leave. You could go, "I'm going to be that. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave and I'm going to do all that kind of stuff." And I tell you, every single weekend, don't even try. You can't be a Christ follower without Jesus. You can't do any of this stuff without Jesus. And actually, that's the point. Do you know how Jesus would always set it up? He would always set it up like this. He would tell somebody this great story, and he would say, "This is the kind of life you can have. It's going to be awesome. You're somebody's perfect person, and you don't have to judge them from far away. And you can disagree with them and still be for them. That can be your life." And he'd say, just like he did to this guy, he told this guy, he says, "So go do it." And you know why he said go do it? Because he knows if the guy goes and tries to do it, after about 2 or 3 days, he's going to do, "I can't do this." And then that's as Jesus saying, exactly. You need me to do that. Jesus is so clever. He ends the story, he says, and doesn't that sound good? That sounds good, huh? And everybody's like, yeah, we're going to do that. He says, everybody go try it. So everybody runs out and tries it, and then they hit the wall the first time, and they go, I can't do this. And Jesus says, I've been trying to tell you, you need me. You can't be someone's neighbor unless he's your neighbor. You can't be the one unless he's your one. We can't be a church for everyone in a million years unless Jesus is everyone for us. No way. He's the reason. How are you doing with him? Because he loves you and he wants the best for you. And so in this story, the man probably would have gone off and tried all these things, and then he would have realized, oh, it's not about where you draw the line. It's about having a relationship with Jesus. That's why all those people seem so close to God, not because they know where to draw the line. And that's who we are as a church.